Have a seat. So,
Giles, who'll be appearing with me for Fish and Game from this point on.
Hello.
Hi.
And Mum.
Okay, so, you know... Oh, sorry.
Introduce myself. May I please report, I'm Rick Swan here for Forest and Bird in the absence of Pat Anderson.
Great. Sorry, what's your name? Who?
Rick Swan.
And how do you spell your last name?
Z-W-A-A-N.
Z-W-A-A-N.
Yeah.
That's fine. All right. Actually, very good that you're both here. Have a seat. Anybody else who wants to be... Any other party who wants to be introduced? No. Okay. Well, I mean, obviously, imperfect process, thinking about it overnight. We were obviously hoping that we would get to the ORC's new, you know, supplementary evidence today. I don't think that's a perfect process. Didn't know whether, for example, Forest and Bird and Fish and Game would actually even be here, because I thought you were caught up in the High Court on Lindis, so you may not have been here, and may not, even if you were going to be here, may not have been ready for cross-examination. So thinking about it this morning, it's actually not fair just simply to go with what people in the room have to say, because there's not many parties, very, very few of the parties who are actually here. So it's not just those folk who are represented by counsel or by advocates, but actually anybody who wants to have an opportunity to file evidence in response to supplementary evidence by the Regional Council, and anybody, any party who may wish to cross-examine. So I thought, thinking about it, an imperfect process, so we're just trying to push more time into the schedule, and that'll have a knock-on effect, but it is what it is. It's good that the Regional Council is reflecting, as all parties are reflecting on their cases, is exactly what the court would expect. But, you know, saying that the changes are, you know, are substantial, it is helpful to get those changes out at this point in time, with the Council taking care to establish that there is scope for those changes, and to, you know, carefully put its case as to the merits of those changes. It's good to get that out early, for the obvious reason that many parties will want to reflect on that as to how that informs or impacts their own position, whether it does, whether it doesn't. But it's also good to put some time, an adequate time in for everybody. So hence the minute this morning. And lots of people have responded, which is fantastic, no doubt assisted by Mr. Cooper, who's been working the phone since early this morning, and what has he done? He has phoned at least those parties who have filed evidence, and in particular planning evidence, to ascertain their position, as you know, to alert them as to what was happening, and to the court's interest in whether they would want to cross-examine or alternatively would want to file supplementary evidence. So he's been very successful. You know, there's been some parties that he's missed, but he's also managed to make contact with many other parties. But, you know, in saying that, that's not everybody. You know, we've got a huge number of persons who are formerly parties to this proceeding, so they also have to have an opportunity to be heard. Hence the staggered times. 1 o'clock to talk to those parties with counsel in the room or representatives in the room, and 2:30 hopefully to pick up on everybody else. So, what were we hoping? If it is a fair and appropriate process, we were hoping to get to the ORC's evidence no earlier than Thursday. That'll allow people time to prepare evidence in reply, if they wish, but then to reflect and consider on their own case and whether there are any changes as a consequence to that. But also to prepare for cross-examination, if they wish. And all that takes time, and it's best not to be done in a pressure cooker. So that was what my thinking was. If we could get to ORC in the morning, that would be sufficient time to hear from the planning witnesses if they are, A, available, B, prepared, and C, counsel are also ready. And that's for Ngāi Tahu Director General and the Minister. And, you know, and again, you're responding to OIC supplementary evidence. I think the indications are all three may be filing further evidence. The planners from all three have not been cross-examined by any other party, so there's impacts there as well. And so my hope is that we'd get to it Thursday afternoon or Friday, but actually that might be unrealistic, and it may be that the best course is simply to adjourn to allow everybody time to consider their positions. So I am not indefinitely Ms. Baker Galloway. So it is what it is. And with, I think, the natural justice and fairness being the court's primary concerns here around the process of interposing this evidence from the ORC, what are everybody's thoughts?
Well, ma'am, I will lead off, and first of all, with an apology that a memorandum has not been filed as directed on behalf of Ngā Runanga about Ms. McIntyre's evidence. I had rather anticipated I might be able to just record the position in front of the court, but a short supplementary statement will be filed. So Ms. McIntyre has reflected on the Regional Council's changes, particularly those of Mr. De Pelsmaker, and we'll have some further refinements based on that. That statement of evidence can be filed tomorrow, probably tomorrow morning, given we may have some additional time this afternoon. And that will essentially be a replacement set of provisions compared to what's in Ms. McIntyre's evidence in chief, so recognising that the case is moving on. The underlying reasoning will be is essentially based on the rationale in the evidence in chief, so it will only need short further explanation. From a fairness and procedural point of view, certainly understand the court's position and concerns, and given the breadth of parties involved, there is a risk of particularly those later parties being heard in Cromwell essentially missing the boat. So, and it is important for a first instance process to have a degree of inclusiveness. So, certainly have no objection to what the court proposes, and should it be considered that a further adjournment is sensible in advance of hearing from Ms. McIntyre, Mr. Ensor, and Mr. Browse, I think, then certainly we wouldn't take a position one way or the other and abide the court's decision on that.
So you think Cromwell parties, that is later in time parties, who are at the moment are scheduled for Cromwell hearing, could still miss the boat under this proposition?
No, I don't think so, ma'am, in that the burden of becoming a party to a case lies with each party to maintain an interest and keep a tab on things, and provided they are being updated, which I understand they are, then there is a responsibility on each of those parties to manage their case in their interest. It does, however, occur to me that in terms of where we are at, it's a reasonably pivotal moment in terms of some of the major parties, particularly those with expert witnesses, having to reevaluate their cases and possibly reconfigure them in some instances, possibly significantly, and the flow-on impact that has on unrepresented parties will need to be carefully considered by those parties, to the extent they may have been, not being disparaging, but riding on the coattails of a represented party.
Yeah. No, I understand that, and that's fair. So they would have got everybody would have got an email overnight about at least indicating, do you want to file, particularly those parties who are filing planning evidence, do you want to file supplementary briefs? That I think will take into account all of those parties in Cromwell who are at least calling evidence, perhaps with one or two minor exceptions. Southern Lakes. Get there. Not that Southern Lakes is necessarily minor, but I'm just thinking of all those parties that have called evidence, not just parties that have called planning evidence, so it's obviously one of where the major burden will come, but all parties calling evidence, whether they wish to have time to file supplementary. Now, there's we know that there's going to be a large number of parties that are not putting in written evidence because they haven't put in written evidence and evidently are going to speak to their submission or some form of speaking to it or being sworn in without any written evidence. But were the directions overnight too tight is what I'm saying, because it was particularly focused on planning evidence, those that had filed planning evidence.
Well, ma'am, they were tight, but I certainly could have complied, and I apologise for not doing so.
Oh, no, not in terms of timing, but in terms of the focus on planning only.
Well, no, I don't think so, ma'am, because the foundation evidence and the factual evidence that's been filed is before the court, and the evidence that has been sought from the Regional Council is adding to that factual base. As to whether any party disagrees with that, they're entitled to do so. And I don't wish to necessarily speak for other parties, but from my perspective, it appears that the case is appropriately starting to have quite a strong planning focus, which is quite appropriate in terms of the wording of the plan change and its appropriateness as a mechanism, respecting entirely the fact that some parties may still maintain the position that Plan Change 7 is unnecessary. But it's fine to maintain that position, but you may as well express a view on how it can be improved if the court is inclined to approve it. So I don't have a concern with the breadth of the direction made by the court, because I think the mechanics of the plan change is where the court's interest lies at the moment. Certainly, the stage we're at, we may broaden out back again into technical evidence and indeed some factual evidence. And inevitably, that's what will happen in Cromwell. But at the moment, there's a strong focus on the planning stuff. And in terms of Friday, subject to fairness issues, my submission is that it would be convenient and efficient to hear from the planning witnesses from Ngāru Nanga, the Director General, and the Minister, if possible, because, well, certainly from the court's perspective and from those parties represented in court, it's a strong block of planners. So we're all able to focus on those issues in a convenient manner, and probably from a questioning cross-examination point of view, there's likely efficiencies as well, I would have thought.
Yeah. With your evidence updated brief from Ms. McIntyre to come in tomorrow, you're thinking?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it will be very brief, because you've already heard some preliminary thoughts from Ms. McIntyre, and essentially now that Mr. Pelsmaker has done a quite significant revision of his recommendations, it will focus on the merits of those.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Winchester. Ms. Dixon.
just picking up from where Mr. Winchester finished, really, the question around the timing of a supplementary brief from the Minister's planning witness, who's Mr. Ensor. My first response to your direction of last night was actually to seek a longer interval for preparing the evidence on the basis that, unlike Mr. Winchester's planning witness, Mr. Ensor hasn't been heard at all, and his brief of evidence was filed at the beginning of February, and things have moved quite a lot since then. So he was anticipating that his supplementary brief would also have to, at least to some extent, pick up on issues that were still live from his February brief. And we were thinking that that might require a little bit of time. We also had a look at the hearing schedule. And when I say we, I mean that there's been some conferring this morning with counsel for the Director General and Mr. Welsh for Trustpower and so on, just simply around this question of timing. And we were looking at the schedule and thinking, if these witnesses actually can't be heard until possibly well into your time in Cromwell, then they should be given longer to... They might as well have longer to prepare the evidence on the basis that there's no point in hurrying it. Your second direction changed our thinking around that a little bit because obviously there was then the possibility... or the likelihood that those witnesses would be heard this week in conjunction with council's planning witnesses.
I'd have to say, I have no fixed view on this. I'm trying to what is fair, not only to people in the room, but bringing with us people who are not in the room.
Yes.
Yeah.
And which brings me back to Mr. Winchester, really, his point that, and I agree, that there are this is a collection of planning witnesses who have a substantial position to put. And from everybody's point of view, probably the sooner you hear from the complete range of those planning experts, the better. So I understand the thinking about later this week. On that basis, Mr. Brass and Mr. Ensor are not here. They are back in their offices or their hotel rooms or whatever, beavering away, in fact, right now on a supplementary brief. So my suggestion was that it would probably take until Thursday, and that was in the memorandum that I filed this morning, simply so that Mr. Ensor can, in fact, review where he was on the 5th of February, respond to... Mr. De Pelsbaker's 14th of March PC7 version, which is clearly the most important thing, but make sure that he picks up on anything that, that he needs to from his earlier brief. And if they, meaning Mr. Brass and Mr. Ensor, are to be heard on Friday or Thursday, then probably Thursday about 5 p.m, we thought was the latest, that their evidence would need to be available to the court and to the parties. But how that exactly works with the other parties, I'm not sure.
Yeah, and that's the other question. It's fine to have the evidence in by 5 p.m, but everybody be ready for cross-examination?
Exactly. And we did have a quick discussion with Mr. Moore about that this morning, and he no doubt wanted to comment on that himself, but we were kind of trying to work around what people thought was the minimum amount of time they'd need to prepare for cross-examination, but that doesn't, of course, take into account the court's capacity or the time you have to read in advance as well.
OK. All right. Thank you. Ms. Williams?
Yes, Your Honour, for the Director-General in a similar position to Ms. Dixon and Mr. Winchester, and I certainly do agree, Your Honour, that there is a utility to the court because Narunanga, the Minister and the Director-General, have already opened, we've presented our cases based on the notified version. I think it would be of assistance to the court to be able to also hear the position on the revised version and hear the planning witnesses together. So there is a utility in getting that before the court now. In relation to the other parties, Your Honour, I do accept that potentially what might need to happen if these witnesses are called this week is it may be that they have to be excused and at some point have to come back so that other parties have an opportunity to cross-examine. And that might be the way to manage that. In terms of those other parties catching up with where we've got to, what I also note, Your Honour, is that the Cromwell hearing is set down, I think, from the middle of April. So there is time for those parties to have a chance to actually look at the transcript, look at the evidence, the additional evidence that will have been filed, reflect on that, and then come to a view on what their positions may be at that point.
Right, rather than at 2:30 today.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's fair enough too.
Yes.
Okay.
Because in fairness to those other parties, Your Honour, it has been moving very quickly, and that provides that opportunity to them. And I'm aware that we had, I think there is some time available in May, and it may be that at this point, tentatively, that could be available for cross-examination.
Yeah. Now, would you want to start your witnesses, only to have them to come back, or would you want to start and finish? And if you're thinking maybe your witness comes back in May, then, well, they may need to come back in May anyway about that schedule.
Yes.
Which has gone off for expert conferencing. So so then what? Is it the case of a further supplementary brief of evidence once we know the outputs of the schedule of the expert conferencing, together with, and at the same time that is, with a response to the ORC's case, or do you envisage filing two briefs of evidence, one addressing the ORC's case and how that might have impacted the planner's impact, you know, impacted on the planner's thinking in terms of the provisions but not the schedule, and then writing a second one? So, you know, the expert conferencing and its timing is another additional thing to be factored into account.
And it may be, Your Honour, that if that then results in a further iteration of Mr. de Pelsenmaker's plan change 7...
And it might.
Mm. Then that could indeed be what needs to happen, Your Honour, is that there is a second brief of supplementary evidence that would need to be filed at that point to address those factors, and which would then be at a point where, because those witnesses would be back before the court, they would be available for cross-examination.
I always thought that witnesses would have to come back before the court if you had expert conferencing in April, I think, as we initially scheduled it, or May, or whenever it was then scheduled.
Yes.
Just simply to respond to the outputs of
Absolutely.
The conference, and that's what the final week actually allows. It actually allows quite a bit of time for pulling people back in, responding to the expert conferencing, and final say by the Regional Council.
Yes.
So, you know, is another way of tackling it to say, to call the region's witnesses this week or at an appropriate time when everybody everyone's been given an opportunity to indicate whether they wish to cross-examine. And then we hold off filing further evidence until we're in a position to file further evidence once we've got the outputs from the expert conference. In other words, you just do it once at the end of the hearing. Or is that also unsatisfactory?
I suppose, Your Honour, I do think that there is a utility in responding to the version which we now have before the court,
and that
waiting for, I think it would be 3 weeks, for that additional conferencing to be completed and then responding, that is actually potentially unfair to, again, those Cromwell parties, because they only get actually the time after the conferencing and that additional evidence is filed to consider and respond and reflect. This way they have seen a starting point, if I put it that way, of what the response to the 14 March version of the plan change might be. They understand that there may be some changes to that depending on the outcome of the further planning conference, but at least they know where these parties, so I'm talking hopefully, I'm not sure, I'm talking certainly for the Director-General and possibly also for Ngā Rūnanga and the Minister, but they at least know what where the thinking has moved to, where the positions have moved to.
And do you think we'd need to hear from your witnesses before the final week, or could we have you filing and then being examined in the final week?
that's really for you, Your Honour, I would have thought, as to how that's best going to assist you.
Well, it's just a process question. If we have it in writing, how your responses have been informed and possibly changed, then everybody has that in writing. Then we can wait for the schedule to come free and again have either a joint witness statement from planners, which is the ideal outcome, is everybody signs a joint witness statement. That becomes the evidence on behalf of everybody. But yes, if not, then planners then providing a further supplementary on the schedule.
Yes.
And then leaving it to the final week for cross-examination. So it's a question of how many... Yeah. You're relaxed?
I'm in the court's hands on that, Your Honour. You know, with difficulty, Mr. Browse could be back here on Friday, and if that's the way you want to manage this matter, then certainly that can happen. If we want to get the evidence in, but actually not get to cross-examination on it until a later point, after the planning conference, both on the schedule, and I think there was potentially also going to be further planning conferencing as well. Then that makes sense too.
Okay, both ways make sense. Yep. All right, thank you. Ms. Baker-Galloway.
So just to clarify, yesterday wasn't the Lindis.
Lindis
week. 1, 2, 3, and myself won't be around the week of the 19th.
I was just wondering why they would stay here, you know.
So,
amazing.
So the 19th of April was when we were all tied up in the High Court, unless we settle.
Some other... Just putting it out there.
Yeah. Still option. But yes, I was in the High Court in Wellington yesterday for something
else.
But not that one.
Yep. All right, got it.
So, Fish and Game, we are comfortable to proceed on Thursday as you've proposed, if everyone else is, and I know you haven't heard from everybody yet, but I think it's a good use of the court and everybody's time to proceed, and that the adjournment until then will be used really well, so it'll be an efficient cross-examination rather than a bit more of a scrambled one than it might have been today. So I think that was was a good call. And similarly, happy to also cross-examine the three witnesses from the recalled Ngāi Tahu planning witness and the ministers and the Director General's witnesses on Friday if we get to them. The issue for Fish and Game is... as we were scheduled to open this week.
Don't think that's happening.
Well, I know it's not happening, but Dr. Hayes flew down this morning.
Ah, okay.
Yes, and he's here. Mm. And if it was possible, and again, you'll hear from everyone on this suggestion, to also hear from Dr. Hayes this week, and what I'm suggesting is I don't even need to open for Dr. Hayes's evidence to be considered, because the context that it will be relevant to Fish and Game's case hasn't materially changed. We are, in terms of the table that Dr. Hayes recommended with the minimum flow and allocation hydrological alteration thresholds, that is still a part of Fish and Game's case in that it sets a, we say, it sets a precautionary bottom line threshold, you know, no more than minor threshold.
So that hasn't fallen away, if I could put it that way, as a consequence of Mr.
To Pulsemaker's.
Yeah, Pulsemaker's evidence.
So, I'll be as transparent as I can. We do see a lot of really good changes in Mr. Pulsemaker's evidence, particularly in that policy, but we are still seeing there's an additional place somewhere in the plan change framework for that precautionary, no more than minor threshold to be put in. That's the work that we'll be doing between now and submitting Mr. Farrell's supplementary by end of Monday. So it could be that Dr. Hayes is called tomorrow if everyone agrees and the court considers it's useful. And then that would be an efficient use of Dr. Hayes's time and the you know, the, everything that goes into getting a witness down from another town. Otherwise, in terms of availability, you know, as with everyone else, I'm sure, we get to a point where there's more juggling going on and calling people out of order and so on and so forth. So
your thoughts on... Dr. Hayes accepted Don't think we're going to get to your case this week.
Correct.
It's pretty certain.
Yep.
All right.
On the same page there. So everyone else we can sort of deal with. There might be a bit of massaging, but because he's flown down from Nelson and he is here, we could take... My strong preference is that we do hear from him because his place in our case hasn't actually changed materially.
All right. So you could be ready. I guess what you're saying is, look, if we were to hear from the Minister, Director General and Ngāi Tahu, you could be ready Friday if they were to file their evidence Thursday, is really what you're saying.
Ready to cross?
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
happy to prepare for that on that basis, yes.
Okay. Any thoughts on whether they should file in response to the ORC's new case and or amended case and then file again once we get those schedules through and then just hear from them once and once only in the last week?
Probably from Ms. McIntyre, because we have heard partly from her.
Mm.
Possibly that makes sense, although I don't know if Ngāi's got an interest in the schedule. No. See, Fish and Game doesn't have an active interest in the schedule either.
No. Mm.
So, but we haven't heard at all from Mr. Ensor and Mr. Brass on the whole thing. You know, we haven't they've not been heard on Te Manawatewai and NPS, you know, all those other, at the NPS REG, which is still, I think, a pretty live issue. So there's a lot of other substantive issues, as well as the content of the plan change and the schedule, that it's probably more appropriate to hear from them on now while those issues are, we're all still live, you know, dealing with them on quite a dynamic basis.
Then do we hear from them next week instead of ORUG, as I've suggested? And obviously we've got to speak to Mr. Page about that. ORUG seems to, you know, it has a large case and it's got all of its witnesses ready for next week, which is why I suggested that we just sort of not, you know, keep that case intact and just let it run next week.
Instead of on Friday?
Yeah.
Right. Oh. Well, I mean, unless...
Yeah, I mean, we... So
I guess I've got no strong view whether it's Friday or next week.
Yep. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Was I going to say anything else? No, I think that was the gist of it. Yeah, which was mainly a plea to consider hearing Dr. Hayes tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mum.
Forrest and Bird.
We are pretty happy with what the court's proposed this morning, so we're reasonably happy in terms of hearing from the rest of the planning evidence on Thursday, Friday from the Regional Council Minister and Director General and the Runanga, and would be interested in cross-examining Mr. De Pelsmaker as well.
Yeah. Were you, and I don't recall, were you always down to cross-examine Ngāi Runanga?
I believe so.
Yeah.
I'll double check.
Minister and Director General? And you'd be happy to proceed on Friday if those witnesses were called on Friday?
Yeah.
And you're going to be doing it, or are you committing Pete Anderson to doing it? Just so.
I've talked to Pete Anderson about it, and he's happy for me to do it. He's going to help send some questions and stuff through.
Oh, okay, gotcha. You're going to be doing it. Okay.
Yeah, no, if that's all right.
Yeah.
And so we're happy to be rescheduled to whenever to present our case after ORUG. I think that makes sense.
Sorry, can you say it again?
So we're happy with what the court proposed in terms of being scheduled later and hearing ORUG's case next week.
Yep.
And I think it is helpful to hear the planning evidence this week. Otherwise, I think we'll end up in a perpetual revisions of the plan. So I think it's more useful to get a clearer picture of where everyone's at sooner.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Mr. Page.
Thank you. Happy to accommodate cross-examining the planning witnesses on Friday or any other day this week that suits the court, but also perfectly comfortable with the idea that we don't do that until we return to Dunedin in May.
Mm-hmm.
So from ORUG's point of view, there's no magic in doing it on Friday. Also happy to accommodate Dr. Hayes this week, whether that's tomorrow or any other day. Understand he's down from Nelson and We'd like to be able to release him. And we'd also like to hear and have the chance to have tested his evidence about the thresholds before we open our case too. That's reasonably important to my clients.
Okay. Yep, understood. So, okay. Mm-hmm.
In terms of when ORUG should present its case, we wish to proceed on Tuesday. Mr. Hickey's evidence we wish to take on Tuesday, and so opening and having Mr. Hickey done on Tuesday is important to ORUG.
And I think having Mr. McIndoe also on Tuesday important to the court, because the court didn't quite understand some of aspects of his evidence, and we really didn't want to go into an expert conference without having teased it out or clarified what his evidence was.
Yes, so hopefully we can deal with all that on Tuesday. The other thing which, of course, ORUG is obliged to do is to file a memorandum tomorrow about its position. We spent all morning on Zoom this morning with the vagaries of rural broadband, which is always exciting. And so I'm expecting to have a memorandum for the court by 9 a.m. tomorrow. What I'm also anticipating is asking Ms. Dicey to file a sample set of provisions by the end of this week that reflects the change in position.
Yeah. So now, when you say by the end of this week, what day do you are you proposing? Again, bearing in mind that other parties with an interest want to get their heads around it and cross-examine. And it may also be relevant to inform their understanding of your case, which I know is to come 9:30 tomorrow, as well as through Ms. Dicey's evidence.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I have to say that I've asked Ms. Dicey via email when she could have those provisions prepared for filing, and I don't have an answer yet. But, of course, it makes sense that that happened before we open our case, so that everybody knows where we're going. But hopefully some direction should be apparent from what we file tomorrow morning.
Okay. And so, quite apart from what Ms. Dicey may do relative to any change in direction, if there is change in direction from ORUG, she'll be filing in response to Gilroy, King and Bowsmaker.
Well, I don't think Ms. Dicey will be filing in response to the evidence from Ms. Gilroy or Ms. King.
Oh, okay.
She may wish to anchor what she says about provisions that that ORUG are proposing by reference to what Mr. De Pelsmaker has said. It's limited to a response to that, I think.
Okay, so, no, that's okay. I've just misunderstood something that's come to me. So cross-examination, I think it would be true, Gilroy, King and De Pelsmaker.
Yes.
But that you're anticipating filing a response to Mr. De Pelsmaker's evidence only by Ms. Dicey or by any witness, together with perhaps a change in position or a reflection on the existing position.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. And you're proposing to have that done by...
Well, we need to have that with the court on Friday afternoon. Otherwise, nobody knows what's happening.
Does it... okay, and your reflection back tomorrow, would that be sufficient to inform other parties as to your purpose in the cross-examination? Where are we going with the cross-examination? And
well,
I mean, that's critical. They understand the relevance of the questions.
Yes. So my task is to assimilate a good deal of feedback that I got this morning into something that's intelligible by the court. And that's no small task.
No.
Nor is the authority line to actually get that filed. So I understand what you want and why you need it. It's my job to get that done by 9 a.m. Tomorrow.
Okay. So wherever you land, it should be sufficient in the absence of evidence, if that's coming in on Friday, such that the line of cross-examination is understood by the court and by the other parties.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the intention is to explain in the memorandum tomorrow the kind of provisions that ORUG say should be incorporated into Plan Change 7, but what we won't have by tomorrow morning is sample provisions for the court to see.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. All right, well, that I can certainly understand why that might be the best you can do it tomorrow.
Yes.
Because you've got a wide body of people that you're talking to, and I do understand that as well. Mm. Okay. All right. So, evidence, your evidence from any further evidence in response to Mr. De Pelsmaker should be in by 3 p.m. On Friday. Mr. Walsh.
Thank you, Ma'am. In respect of that direction, does that apply to all parties or just for ORUG to respond?
It definitely applies to ORUG because yes. ORUG's calling its case next week. So there has to be some framework for understanding the new the redirect on ORUG's case next week.
No, thank you. I just thought I should clarify because I had suggested a date of filing Ms. Stiles' evidence on the Monday.
On Monday, so, we need to think about that. That would be on the basis, I guess, like you, Fish and Game, Wise, we're not going to get to your hearing this week, week. So,
and it doesn't make sense to start and to be put in the same position as DOC and MFE are in terms of having part of our case and then not Ms. Stiles and then catching up. So, and we're a discrete section, so
you are
that makes sense.
Mm. All right, so what we have noted from you, though, is that cross-examination on Mr. De Pelsmaker's brief and the answer to supplementary evidence was yes, and you're proposing it by Monday the 22nd of March, and then the question becomes when do you and everybody else that was scheduled for this week open your cases, and that needs to be thought about.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
And I also I haven't given any notice or I didn't give any notice to cross-examine Ms. McIntyre, and at least I could make that decision on a somewhat informed basis by reading her evidence in chief, but of course I haven't read her supplementary because it hasn't been filed.
No.
So I would just ask for some latitude that if that was necessary, I think it would be fair to the parties if they hadn't given notice to cross-examine a witness, but they wish to do so on that supplementary, that there'd be some latitude shown to that party.
Well, that is fair, and that's why we're raising the issues both overnight and this morning.
In respect of Ms. Stiles' evidence, it's likely to be relatively confined. One of the upsides of not being provided for in the amended changes by Mr. De Pelsmaker is I don't have a lot to argue, and our existing relief will largely stand, and it will focus around principally the policy in respect of the non-complying gateway.
All right. Well, I'm going to take an adjournment because I want to also see whether we've got any responses, but it might be too early yet, from anybody else who is a party but is not represented. And again, it may well have been that the timeframes allowed for that are too tight, especially if we've got farmers not checking their emails because, they're doing farming things. And so we have to think about when we're able to, whether that of itself is too tight, but we need to think about that. And I haven't forgotten you, Ms. Irving, though I did. Anyway, if I understand, it's got obvious. Territorial authorities,
The evidence and cross-examination. The territorial authorities are likely to want to file supplementary planning evidence, but I think that would be best if that could come following the evidence from Ngā Rūnanga, the Ministry and the Department. so that Mr. Twos can essentially cover off any new matters that come up from that evidence. And given that the territorial authorities are not to be heard until the Cromwell leg of the hearing, I thought there perhaps wasn't any great need to rush Mr. Twos to prepare any supplementary evidence.
Okay. So, and I've noted you also want to cross-examine the Regional Council's policy panel. So,
Yeah. That is in many ways a placeholder at the moment, but we're just seeing how the other questions go. But I'd like to reserve the ability to do that.
Fair enough. Okie dokie. So we'll take an adjournment so we can check to see what responses we did get. No, sorry. Did I ignore you? All right, sorry about that, Mr. Moore.
Having perhaps been the source or the cause of...
Oh, you're the elephant in the room.
Yes. I've been reflecting quietly in terms of the position I've put my friends in terms of challenges from a timing perspective, but it's been helpful to hear from them before I can confirm the position on the part of the council. Insofar as the council witnesses appearing on Thursday, they are available, and Thursday will work for them. I just note that Mr. Wilson, if he would slot in the afternoon, if we can accommodate that, given the issues we've previously discussed with his availability this Thursday. In terms of the utility of hearing from the three planning witnesses for the parties who have already opened their cases this Friday, I do see some utility in proceeding with that and testing the position that they reach in response to Mr. De Pelsmaker's latest iteration. In terms of where we're at in the hearing, I do see a benefit in testing that evidence and really seeing where it's at this point, rather than waiting until the last week or two of the hearing following planning caucusing. I acknowledge that there might be a need to hear from those planners again following some joint witness conferencing. But in terms of testing some of the positions that are likely to be put forward, I do see some utility in doing that sooner rather than later. As to prejudice for other parties, that I'm conscious of that in terms of an interest others may have, but insofar as there has been an interest expressed in those parties' cases, if one looks at the list of parties cross-examining, that the list's not particularly extensive, and we're still dealing with within scope changes to the planning document, so in a sense parties are on notice as to the range of positions that might be being put forward.
Well, that's good to hear. We need to reflect about that. It seemed to me to be, provided that it was fair to people who are not in the room in the courtroom today, it's a fair process to them to allow the Regent's case to continue on Thursday with the cases, I think, now running for the three planners, now running on Friday morning, largely Friday morning, bearing in mind that Friday's a truncated day, that there was some advantage in that. But it really is trying to be fair to everybody, particularly a large body of people in relation to whom there's been relatively, you know, a lack of direct communication. But it doesn't matter that there's not much communication. We still have to communicate, or at least do our best. So we're just going to take a short adjournment, find out what's happening at 2:30, if anything's happening at 2:30 for those who are not represented in here today, and then reflect back whether even 2:30 was sufficient time. Or, you know, should we have allowed overnight when farmers get back to their emails, as we were told at the PHC. So it may be that the best we can do today is just a tentative outcome. This is how we're running, how we're proposing to run the case, but if anyone's prejudiced, they've got to tell us, as opposed to doing nothing. And it being, I would have thought, a perfectly valid point for an appeal to the High Court. If we're not allowing adequate time for parties to come back and reflect their interest or record their interest and be heard and cross-examine, if that's what they want to do.
No, I'm alive to the risk, and that's as much the council's risk as it is the court's risk in terms of this process and the output from it.
And there's still, you know, can be other processes built in into this about recalling any witness that turned out to be required for cross-examination, yes. but that hadn't been signalled. So it's not the end of the road. But I'd rather have a fair and robust process than just simply burn people off because we haven't engaged appropriately or are engaging with people who are in front of us only. OK, so we'll take a short adjournment.